That was our guest from yesterday, Charles Barkley. We want to thank Charles, Sir Charles, again. He covered just about everything. If you want to listen to the highlights from the show yesterday, go to headgamesradio.com. You can click on about 3,000 MP3s, which include about 50 Hall of Famers, 16 NFL quarterbacks, and head coaches. But let's stick with this subject, which is ESPN and the culture that covers sports so intensely. We're joined by Bob Melvin talking about the World Series. Bob, what a big game for David Eckstein. Was that enough of a game to make him a Hall of Famer for the week?
Well, at least for the day. I mean, you're starting to see these veteran guys come to life, the Edmondses and Rollins and Eckstein, and these are the guys that make St. Louis a team that won 100 games last year as opposed to the unhealthy team that ended up winning 83 this year. So, you know, these guys are coming up big at the right time, and Eckstein was the man last night.
Well, we'll get back to that in a second, but let's talk with our good friend Bob Melvin about what this means. To me, it looked as if the management decisions by Jim Leland were the correct ones. You had Casey coming through and Pudge Rodriguez breaking out of his slump, three early runs as well. It looked as if Detroit was back on track, and yet time and again now in four consecutive games, Detroit's pitchers have committed errors. Have you ever seen anything like that in a World Series before? We know that it ties the record, but is this because of the delay? Is this because of the delay, or is it because of simply the inexperience of Detroit?
Well, I think a little bit inexperience, and I think, you know, yesterday with Rodney, you know, you're looking at a young guy still that gets in a situation where, you know, you see a lot of pitchers just tighten up on balls to first base. I mean, they can throw the ball on a dime at 95 miles an hour, but can't throw the ball over to first base, and you see that quite a bit. And usually that's from the inexperienced guys, and it cost them. You know, and you talk about these errors and what they've missed. They've all been at big times of the game, other than really the Jones one, and they've all cost them.
Well, Verlander had that pickoff move in the first game. Jones, I think, had just hit his foot. Zumaya was sort of a fundamental where he chose to go to third and threw behind the guy. And then Fernando Rodney was pitching lights out. I mean, I think most people would say he was pitching extremely well last night. But he picked up that ball. I don't know if the ball was slippery or what, but it looked like high school. What was going on in that play?
And it's just, you know, it's some of the times it's the toughest place for those pitchers to make. Like I said, they can hit a dime with a 95-mile-an-hour fastball, but when, you know, something's right in front of them and it's an easy out, that elbow locks up, and I've seen it plenty of times. So, you know, it's come at a very inopportune time, and, you know, it's too bad it's happened because Rodney was pitching great last night. I mean, that was probably the move of the game that Leland makes to bring him in, two punch-outs, they're out of the inning, momentum back in their dugout, and then the next inning on the bunt play, that really was probably the deciding factor in the game.
And you get the slip in the outfield by Granderson, and then suddenly, just like that, it doesn't really come down to skill. It comes down to chance as well. I guess you've got to try to control the things you can. I still don't understand, though, why Kenny Rogers, in this situation down 3-1, why Leland isn't going to go with Kenny Rogers, his true veteran, the guy that is truly pitching lights out, because if they lose tonight, it's over anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, they have a lot of confidence in Verlander. Those are probably, you know, the two guys they really rely on. So, you know, he's going to go with his two best. And, you know, rather than bring Rogers back a day early and not have the kind of rest that he's had and, you know, pitching as well as he has on regular rest, I guess that goes into his decision.
And maybe the fact that there might be just a little itsy-bitsy more controversy playing in St. Louis after what happened in Detroit in his previous game. Well, let's talk about the matchup tonight with Verlander and Weaver. Would you go with Weaver tonight after the way Reyes pitched?
Well, you know, Tony's an experienced guy. You know, he likes the guys that have been out there and, you know, been through the wars. Reyes gave him a great game that they didn't expect, but I think he feels like he probably knows a little bit more what he's going to get out of Weaver tonight than he does of Reyes, so that probably goes into his decision. And, I don't second-guess him on that because, you know, Reyes probably has better stuff, but, you know, in the situation they're in right now, 3-1, he wants to go with an experienced guy.
Well, I was in Kansas City back in 1985 when the Royals came back from 3-1. And what are the chances that history can repeat itself? Because even though it seems insurmountable, you win the first game, suddenly you've only got one more game, you're back in Detroit, then Kenny pitches, let's say he wins, and now all the momentum shifts in the other direction. What do you think of the chances that can happen?
That's exactly right. Today's huge for them, and I expect Detroit to swing the bats a little better like they had last night, score some runs off Weaver, and hope, you know, they hope that Verlander's stuff gets them through the game, because now you get it back to Detroit, you got it in Rodgers' hands on full rest, and you expect to win that game, and now once it gets to Game 7, it's anybody's game. So obviously for them, the key game's tonight.
All right, well, let's take us through. We're putting the pressure on you, which is the nature of this game as well. I'll just list the teams that have come back from 3-1. In 85, it was the Royals. In 79, the Pirates were down 3-1 against the Orioles. 68, of course, it was again the Tigers and the Cardinals. What do you think of the chances tonight? What would you say would be the key message, given that Jim Leland is an easygoing guy? Is he going to try to light a fire tonight, or is he going to try to focus on one or two key players that he thinks with a little bit more confidence are going to make the big plays? What would be your strategy in that dugout before the game?
Well, I mean, once you get to this point in time in the series, you know, you've exhausted pretty much all you can do. I mean, everybody knows the urgency of today's game. So, they expect these guys to go out, and you're going to probably try to force the game a little bit early, maybe if you get some guys on, maybe hit and run a little bit and try to put some pressure on the other side. But it's not like, you're going to have a team that's going out there flat tonight. You know, they know what's involved. There's a lot of urgency. You know, there's a lot of momentum against them right now. But if you just look the matchup truly for what it is tonight, you would think that Detroit has an edge on the matchup, at least at the pitching end. So, you know, they know if they get through tonight's game and if they play it one game at a time and get it back to Detroit, they got a good chance once it gets home.
Final question for you before we go to a different subject, which is NASCAR with Leilani Munter. Is Justin Verlander, a guy that was, in most cases, people would say was the top ace for Detroit, and yet he said he was not throwing mechanically well in that first game, didn't have the velocity. What was he doing, and what would he need to do to change that? I mean, you're saying this season has been so long that you really can't make a lot of changes, but clearly with a guy that's that young, that has that much talent, you got to make some adjustments.
Well, he's got to go after it tonight. You know, and if he doesn't have the command thrown and, you know, being aggressive, a little more aggressive than he was the last time, then you just get beat being aggressive. And, you know, it just looked like last time he was a little bit tentative, trying to spot the ball a little bit more than he normally does. You know, pick out a spot in the catcher's glove and throw the ball right through it, because he has the stuff to get by if he's in the strike zone. It's when he's, you know, a little bit timid, you don't see quite the velocity or the bite on his breaking ball like he did last time, that he has a chance to get in trouble.
Well, we'll let you go, but my final question to you, my friend Bob Melvin, besides thanking you for coming through for us this week, and hopefully we'll have some fun stuff to talk about on Monday, is the psychological move of benching a Scott Rolen and the tension between him and Tony La Russa. It seems to have paid off. I mean, it seems as if Scott Rolen's fire was lit, and since then he's, in essence, has been the MVP for St. Louis.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough call. When you have a guy that's after Pujols, he's probably their guy. And to sit him down for a game, you know, probably did get a little more urgency, and you run the risk of losing a little bit to an extent of your clubhouse when you bench a guy like that. But Roland's a professional. He took it well, didn't like it, but the next time he came out there, a little had an incentive. And I don't think it was something he did to try to light a fire under Roland. I think it was more Fizio was hot and he was trying to win that game that night. So it has worked out all the way around.
Well, Bob, who's your pick tonight? Is it over?
You know, I with all the momentum St. Louis has got, being at home and everything, I still like the Tigers tonight. I like them getting it back to Detroit.
I do too. Well, thanks for joining us, Bob. As always, hopefully we'll get a chance to check in with you on Monday as the world turns.
You got it.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Well, now we're changing. We're turning the steering wheel in a different direction, literally with NASCAR. We're joined by a young lady that is breaking the stereotypes on NASCAR. As NASCAR becomes ever more popular, it's important to remember that there are some people that people may not know about that could be the future stars. And one of those people is Leilani Munter. How are you, Leilani?
Hi, I'm doing great. How are you?
Just great. What I want to do as we go into the next segment is talk a little bit about what on earth got you into risking your life driving at a couple hundred miles an hour. We'll talk about your background with Hawaii, a little bit of your acting background as well. But as you listen to us talk baseball and the strategy of baseball, does it ring true that strategy is a big part of what you do as a driver?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's so much more that goes into it. For people who don't follow racing, there's so much more to it than, I think the general public that doesn't watch NASCAR thinks it's just a bunch of people going in circles all day. And while there's some truth to that, there is a lot of strategy going on between the teams, the drivers. You know, the crew chiefs are plotting out what they're going to do as far as pit stops, and there's a lot more to it. And until you watch it and really start paying attention to it, then, you know, yeah, I guess it does just look like a bunch of cars going in a circle.
Well, we're going to talk about that, about strategy, about how somebody who's been an actress in Hollywood is now one of the rising young stars in NASCAR with Leilani Munter, coming back on Head Games Radio, listening to Head Games on Sports Byline. Stay with us.